Mr. Chadwick, Rail 11. We're talking about your time in Austria, in the Bleiburg area, and you'd set up horse patrols. How had you actually learnt to ride, or were you just sort of sat on the horse?
Just sat on it, and you didn't gallop. It took you around all day, and you went to every farm. And as I say, we were looking for expedition prisoners of war to document them so we could pull them in, with the promise, as long as we came home, collected the bounty, etc., they were at liberty to come straight back. But some didn't even want that. They didn't want to come home at all. They were settled there and established. And the other was looking for the SS men who farmed the south out onto these farms as farm labourers, etc. And of course, the way to test them was to look under the armpit for the tattoo mark, because they were tattooed. Some had burnt them out with cigarettes. If you saw a burn mark, that was sufficient to pull him in. And I remember going down as escort to Ronnie Sherlock to the, that's where I was coming down, the prisoner of war camp. And I was so impressed. We talked about it last reunion. We got a bit of it, we got ourselves smartened up. Because I was a bit slap those days. I looked like a German because I was always very fair. Ronnie Sherlock went down, the adjutant, Major Sherlock. I was his bodyguard, and we were all in German vehicles there, German staff cars, what we purloined from Tedeschi. And we walked in, and this commandant stood up, saluted. Everything so efficient in this prison of war camp. And Major Sherlock said he wanted a nominal roll of the whole division prisoners. Now we're talking some men. In 48 hours, I think he said, to which the German replied, it would be ready in 24 hours, and it was. And a few days later than that, for a bet, these prison wars used to come out and work on our areas under supervision. And for a bet this particular day, I said I could go back and get into the prisoner war camp as a prisoner. So I put a German's clothing on, he took nine, and I marched back to the prisoner war camp region, straight into the stalag. Stopped there a few hours and let myself be known. But I got, he checked and I shouted this bloke's name. And all these German, they were all in on it, the German lads. But I marched in and I was fair, I looked a bit Germany anyway. But that was just a little bit of incidental fun, actually.
There was one point where a large party of Croats, I think it was while you were at Bleiburg, yes it was, had to be sent back towards the Yugoslavians. This is not the Cossacks, I'm going to come to that, but there was a large party of Croats as well. Do you remember, because there was only some people involved in this, I know Alan Hay was, but I don't know whether do you remember anything about this?
At the railway station, when they were being fired through, and I think the object on that one was to... You're not talking about the White Russians going back, are you?
No, this is the Croats, the Yugoslavians.
I think the main role we had there, that no one wanted to get out of those... they weren't in cars, they were in cattle trucks. That's where they all tried anyway. No one wanted to be allowed to get out of them cattle trucks. If they did, to go after him or shoot him or whatever it was. Yeah, I remember that bit at Bleiburg.
Did you realise that they were going off to be shot, basically?
Initially, no, but it didn't take long for the Bush telegraph to get going.
How did you feel?
I felt very depressed about it, because we were hearing different versions from different people. They'd been co-opted, they'd been coerced, they'd been forced to fight for the Germans, as it were. And now they were being sent back to be punished by their own people. So we didn't really have sufficient information to know what he was all about.
Did any of them try and escape from the...
Not as I know. I don't think we dare. There was such a guard around me when we got into the stations.
The next thing, I think you went on to Bruckel. Bruckel.
Bruckel.
Bruckel.
That's right.
24th of May. Yeah, 25th of May.
Well, that's the beauty of that one. There's a lovely river there for swimming. And we had a little swimming gala there for the sporting side of life. But every day after duty, there was hundreds of the lads in that river swimming, sunbathing, having a marvellous time, really.
It's all, that is where you met the White Russians as well, the Kononov Cossack Brigade. What do you remember of that?
Well, we were armed. This was something out of this world. And again, when we got down, I can't remember the station, and I was a man. Under no circumstances had to be allowed out at these White Russians or Cossacks or whatever they were. I mean, they did get out, to be shot. But I don't think any of our lads would have shot one of them, to be truthful. But it was only later we got to know that Harold Macmillan, apparently then, was one of the main men. And another politician who was a brigadier, I forget his name, he was well known. They were the architects of this business, transferring these chaps who apparently they'd fought for the Germans and they were being shipped back to Russia for the punishment, which was death. So it was really a tricky situation. But we were that full of it the night after we'd gone out of our minds till we read about it later on. There was so much to do and so much to see at that time.
Anything else about your time at Bruckel? Do you swimming, the Cossacks, anything else?
Having a good time in general. Having a good walking around the village at night.
What were most of the Austrian civilians like to you? I mean,
Wonderful.
I mean, was that just because you were like the conqueror?
I think underneath it was there. You got the odd one that you could see by the expressions and they'd walk away. You know, we'd go around and at the end loosed apple wine. Anyway, I couldn't speak all that much then. I mean, most times the women would come out with a jug and some glasses. Sometimes some of the men would join us, but sometimes they wouldn't. But there was never any friction. But we had the upper hand anyway, we were in charge, so there was no problem.
Anything else you remember about your time there?
Not really. To be honest, having a wonderful time. It was lovely weather. As I say, it was very little regimental duties today, but it knew. Just a little bit of a long little area. And day by day, week by week, the numbers were dwindling as the men were coming home and did more. Because most of them never were getting ready for going home. So it was a wonderful time, absolutely horrible.
Would you have a party when people left?
Oh, well, the party only constitutes one thing, and there's a good drink up and a sing song, and the fire going all night. Oh, how we had the farewell parties.
Now, in July, they moved into Styria. And you ended up at Wilden, where you stayed for about...
Wilden.
And you stayed there quite a while.
Yes, just outside Graz.
Now, that area had been occupied by the Russians before.
That's right.
Was there any signs of their occupation?
The only signs we saw of their occupation was the verbal abuse from the, people. They hated him. They didn't hate him, they were frightened. And they were frightened they were coming back as an occupation force in Venus, that as they called it, Vienna. They were frightened to death of the Russians, because they had a reason to be, Peter. because the Russians are going to get their own back for what has happened to the Americans. But yeah, that's why I say that ragtag and bobtail army came in.
Is that where you saw them?
Oh, no.
No, you saw them earlier, yeah.
Right at the beginning. But they were in with the Yen-A-Ven. We hadn't seen the Yen-A-Ven. That building was about, if I remember right, about 12 miles, 8 miles from Graz. And we used to go into Graz at night, liberty trucks.
What was that like?
Great. Wonderful. Again, the car police. The thing we haven't touched on, one of the most important things, which is with my memory. I'll tell you this, because I think it's a big deal, isn't it, that we want to know. A swimming competition came up. So I entered. I went to Klagenfurt to swim, what they call the Black Pool of Austria. It's called the BTA Swimming Championships, British Troops Austria. So I got there, and got settled, like today and tomorrow was this competition. Got up next morning, somewhere along the line, had no swimming trunks. So one of the lads, and I think he was out of action, he said, "Well, Bob, my eyes, hell of a size this fella." Oh, I said, "No way." So one of the lads says, "I know what you're worrying about. Wear a cap comforter. You remember the cap comforter with the ears poking through? Well, funny enough, they fit." Oh, I said, "I swim then. That wasn't mine." So I went there, and there was a big lake at Klagenfurt. They'd roped off the Royal Engineers. And I saw the prizes, and I thought they were gold. I did. But I thought, what the hell, now that I'm not training. But none of us have. So we were just swimming after the past experience. However, the old fraternisation band was in. This was important. Because when we got there, we weren't supposed to talk to these German girls. The Austria, you know, well, imagine. It was the darkest band I've ever seen. Anyway, all these girls are on one side, and they're all making eyes at the lads. And they come to our event, and there was couches there watching. And God pulled them both sides, on your marks, go. I dived in, and immediately I dived in. Everything slipped off, straight off my legs. They wouldn't hold, I never thought of that. So I swam the race up and down without trunks on. And then when I went to get my prize, the gold prize that I thought I was getting, gold, I don't know why, well, I know why I thought it was gold. It was on there to, up to a couple of years ago, and I think they did it to tell you. They were the bottom of shell cases, old polished up, made into ashtrays with fifth course scores, BTA championships, you know. And they looked so glamorous on the table. But at night time, in Graz building, you'd be walking down the street, and you'd see a couple of lads up the corner, and you see a girl pop her head out of the door, and then they'd walk down. Slowly, and in. Right? The fraternisation was going on all the time. And I don't know how long it lasted, but it was not probably from the banner. But it was lifted after a few months. But it was in force a few months, it didn't make any difference.
Did anyone ever get into trouble because of it?
No. Not as I know of anyway. And they all left very quickly. But most of them had. In a lot of cases, it was a bit silly because the majority were married men. And of course, some common stuff, medical.
PD.
Which was inaccurate. I mean, that had to happen. And some had their demoblage put back as a result. But they had to have treatment. And you know, I just say it's crazy that these guys going on and they've got a wife in England and they've been away to the other side of England. They've had a spiral of acting to go on the last few weeks. But there again, they were just letting their hair down. You know, life was a challenge, as it were.
Were you aware of the black market, or were you involved in it, or were any of the unit involved?
I was aware of it. Now, I can honestly say, hand on chest, it just wasn't me. I couldn't get involved. What I did, I stole them blankets and gave them to people who were poor. When I said stole them, the commissar would give them. But I used to take them out of a bit of food, especially coffee. That was a big. I know men who bought the houses in Black Island, got enough money. And as a result, men going home, it got to a pitch where to try and stop the black market, we used to come down on Leap, leave in advance of Python. And to put a stop to it, when you got to Dover, when we got to Calais, when you're going along with the customs, they were looking for weapons, because everybody was carrying people. But also then, the new innovation came in, produce your pavements. Now, someone produced the pavements and they'd thrown 2 days in the last 7 months. So they were living on the black market. So the inquiry started. So we curved it a little bit, but men were getting massive parcels of coffee, etc., sent out, chocolate, coffee.
From England?
From England.
Wasn't it a bit short of supply in England?
No, they seemed to get it. Buy the bucket for them. And some literally made thousands.
Was some selling battalion stores?
Not so much with us. I'd say very little. But the people who were most involved in that were the ordnance troops, corps troops. They were the storming of the army. And they ran all these big establishments. There was everything from the thing to the railways in there. And that's where a lot of the marketeering was done.
Did you disapprove yourself of the black market?
Totally.
At the time?
At the time. Totally.
Why?
Because I'm made that way. I'm particular how I get my money. I can't... if I was at work, when I was working here, I could have booked hundreds of hours that I'd worked.
So it's just honesty, basically.
But yeah, I am an honest person. I really am. If I get a bill, I had a gas bill on Saturday morning, and it was paid Saturday afternoon. I'm just that way then.
Did you disapprove of the people who were doing it?
I did. I said, you could do what I do. When I got a bill there, about 10 days, I think, came home, and I got needlework, I had a mother then, stuff with darning needles, knitting needles, knitting wool, a bit of coffee, because they hadn't much so I brought it back, and I gave it to the Dobler family, Frau Julie Dobler. I gave her the...
Why? Were you staying with them? Or?
No, I knew them in the village, they'd given us wine and one thing and another. So I think these little luxuries back to them.
Were you aware of the education classes that were being started under Captain Coutts?
Yes. I regret the day I never took them. Oh, Captain Coutts, yeah.
Why? Why did you regret it? Why didn't you take them? Because
having such a good time. I'm only 21 yet. Yeah, 21. And the higher ranks were still a long, long way away from me. And what happened, when they first started the ACE first class, which you need for the Warrant Officer 1, the initial exams, a fox terrier could have passed them. But as it went on later, they stiffened them up to things like logarithms that I'd never heard of. I left school elementary education doing decimals. That was as high as I ever got. When I came for my promotion, I had no education.
So that's why you regretted not doing it.
It was speeded up, although I got my promotion faster.
But the other thing was that they started the Geordie there, the battalion sort of magazine. You mentioned this off tape yesterday. What did you think of it at the time?
Great. It was smashing. I kept them for what's really happened to Luke Bright years later. We used to quickly peruse it when we got it and then put it away. But over the years, I used to dig them out every now and then and read them. I was saying the last two I gave to Albert when he was in hospital.
Now, in October, the battalion went to Vienna to become the garrison troops, the British representatives. What do you remember that? Where were you billeted for a start?
Just by St. Stephen's Palace, I forget the name. The most important part of that, something which stayed with me,
October 45.
Stayed with me from 1952 at the earliest. We were all kitted out in Australian battle dress. Not khaki. It was like a khaki blue. They were magnificent. And after Vienna, we only used them for walking out. They were that smart. And at this stage, we're talking, Peter, when the transformation in the army was starting, you could wear a tie. Now, the uniform wasn't made for a tie, it was a battle dress. So it's done by stages. We got ties, some whitened them, washed them in toothpaste, and made them white. They turned the flaps of the battle dress back. And we painted them with toothpaste and bleached them, so they look white. And all these innovations were coming in until they got standardised. You know, kinds of ties were. But everybody had it. The battle dress pulled back, unofficial, but accepted. And then if you went down guard, you just pulled it over and buttoned it up again. Everybody was getting. We were getting away with blue murder with the big dress, but as long as you were smart, and which I must say, majority, 90% did turn out smart. They were the best they could do.
And what, you were there, you were part of the guard parties?
Yes.
You were on ceremonial parades. This is when you'd wear this Australian uniform.
Still have. I bet it's mentioned in there. Everybody, later years, where did you get that battle dress from? And they used to call it the 16th battle dress, because only the 16th battalion had them, and they were Australian battle dress thing. How Bertie Newman got them, the old quartermaster, I don't know, but he fitted the whole battalion. Whether it was a concession to do the guard duties.
What do you remember of the big parades? You're on a couple of big parades. Did you like that sort of big ceremonial parade?
I didn't mind the big parades, but it is part of the job. Different when you were RSM and you were taking them and you had to work them out. But it was just another drill parade as far as we were concerned. General McCreary, I think, came and visited us.
You were on guard duties of various buildings in the British section. What was that like?
The first ones, everybody was a bit on edge for the handover takeover, because you'd most likely take it over from the Russian guard. They'd have to go down and liaise the drone buildings, etc. But normal running for their duties, they were.
And how did you get on with the Russians in the...
We had a language difficulty, but other than that, it was common soap and have a drink with them.
Fairly friendly, then?
Oh, yeah.
What about the French and the Americans?
Because everybody. The euphoria was still there. We were the victors and we were there. to do his job and enjoy his time.
What was it like in Vienna then? Because, I mean, it's supposed to be quite a strange atmosphere with the four Allied powers running it. And
well, for my part, I think I was a bit too young to appreciate it. Now, I love to see architecture. It didn't make any sense. I had little brothers, I had a lovely building, that's how they I just want to have a good time standing. I was a bit too young to watch all of that.
Anything else you remember about Vienna?
Not really, other than my old friend Mavra Daphne came home. His father died, and that's when we split up.
What, were you still a corporal, or had you got...
I wasn't a bit sad until I got to Greece, actually. Mavra came back, and...
Were you still? I mean, because he was a company sergeant major then. You were just a corporal, but he was still friendly, was he?
But we were, because then again, you see, if you're in an barracks and you're segregated, but when you all live in a slosh together and you're all knocking the pot back, oh, there's one story I must tell you, Peter. A chap, I was thinking about it last night, Dick. A chap called Walter Swinburne, a long curve. Where were they in Italy? He was suffering terribly with toothache. Well, that's the thing, we can't entertain the troops. If he don't, get them out. Anyway, he said, I can never put up with that again. So, I think when we came back from Greece, he went and got all the teeth pulled out. The whole shooting match. Remember the war ending and the movement? And we're eating hardtack. Old Walt was having a rough time. Anyway, we got to Austria. First job for Walt is down to the dental officer at the brigade. Yes, we picked him up with a set of teeth. But he got these teeth. And he looked like a horse. Well, we were sleeping then in Ala Heidegger's slush on the top floor, about four stories up, and everything was flat outside by a corner.
Is that in the, when you were at Wilden?
Wilden.
Wilden.
So, this particular morning, Walt had got his teeth the day before, and you've heard of what they call grandfather teeth. This particular morning, I don't know duty for, we brought the gunfire in, and we were lying on the floor on his gas caves. We hadn't beds or anything, just laying on the floor. And your PLA, your cup, just by your bed there. Well, Walt, we'd all been on the pot the night before, and we couldn't lift his head. So that was Paddy Doohan came in, and he said, gunfire, PLA's there, Paddy. So Walt Kirby, he said, "Where's your coat, Walt?" He said, "Just there." So he saw it, and there was water in it. So he flung the water out the window, and his teeth were in. I'm nervous. He's been waiting months for this. So anyway, when he calmed down, I said, "Well, Walt, the best thing that's going to happen, because you could never have gone anywhere with him, with my horror." But his teeth went flying straight out the window, and little things like that was the humour it needed.